Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Our guest on today's program loves St. Louis, so much so she has written about it, focusing on its attributes and attractions, some of which are well known and some of which are not. She's Amanda Doyle. Her latest book is a bucket list titled 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die. It follows another published 2 years ago titled Finally, a locally produced guidebook to St. Louis by and for St. Louisans, neighborhood by neighborhood. If you are looking for things to do over the holidays or during the winter season, Amanda has done the looking for you. Amanda, nice to have you with us. And thanks for writing the longest titled book I've ever heard of.
I just assume that booksellers and librarians across the country hate me for that. I when I tell people what it's called, I say it starts with Finally, and then just look for St. Louis, and that's probably the right book.
Well, there's a certain finality, too, to the latest book, because it is a bucket list.
You know, and the cover of it has a it's very graphical, has a bucket on it, and I speak to elementary school kids sometimes about a children's book that I wrote about the Arch, and I always take my other books to show them. Let me tell you, fourth graders think it's hilarious to contemplate. You know, kick the bucket. That's right. And I think, yeah, well, give it 40 years. You may not find it quite as amusing.
As time marches on, things do change. Was it much of a stretch for you to come up with 100 different things, places and things?
You know what's funny? I thought it would be very it wasn't hard to come up with just a huge list. But to narrow it down and to give it a little bit of shape that made sense took me longer than I thought it would. And I was surprised at how much re-research I had to go back and do, because I just kind of thought, well, I wrote one other book. I'm sure it's all still there in the memory vault. But you know, you want to make sure that you're not overlooking things, and things change in some ways so quickly in different neighborhoods that it took me longer than I thought it would.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and I'm sure that people will get a charge out of going through the list and seeing how many of those places that they have already visited and know about.
First thing everyone wants to do, look through the table of contents and see what their number is.
With all of this, did a favorite emerge in your mind? Is there one place, one thing to do that you say, boy, that's my favorite?
You know, it really depends on who I'm with, what the time of year is, that kind of thing. I like finding things that, to me, are not known. You know, I mean, I love to do all the classic St. Louis stuff, too, but I really like finding off the beaten path kind of stuff. And one of the things that is in the book that I discovered writing my prior book is the Wabash, Frisco, and Pacific Railroad out in Glencoe. To me, that's just kind of an oddball thing you're not expecting to run across. And here's this little, you know, 12-gauge steam engine railroad. And I found it fascinating. The times I've been on it, kids love it. Adults love it. It's beautiful. It's sort of out in the woods, yet you're right in St. Louis. I mean, that's the epitome of the kind of thing that I like to discover. So,
Have you visited personally all of the places in the book?
That is a great question. I have not, because
you're young. You've got plenty of time.
I don't want to tempt fate. I feel like if I check off my 100. No, there are a couple of things in the book I haven't done, and a few I kind of am superstitiously saving, actually.
Oh, really?
Just in case. Yeah,
can you give us a hint?
I'll think about it while we talk and let you know.
All right. How do you structure the book?
So the way the book is organized, it's very quick and dirty. Like, there's about one page on each item. And it's roughly alphabetical is what it ended up as, because I did not want to rank things 1 through 100. I think that's a very subjective thing. I mean, coming up with a list is very subjective anyway. But so it's roughly alphabetical. And then in the back, there are itineraries themed around things like date night. You have the kids with you. You have people coming you haven't seen since college. You're really into food, you're really into animals, that kind of thing. Just to, again, to give you a place to dive in if you don't just want to start at the beginning.
And if some of the places you include in the book are places you have not yet visited, how did you research it?
They are places that I have either, I will say the vast majority of them I've done many times. A couple of places that I sought out people who I thought were very different than me or spend their times a lot differently than I do, and ask them for suggestions. And from that, I got actually a great list that I kind of winnowed down to a few. So,
well, with 100, obviously, you expect that many of the places would be places you could visit all year round. And of course, all of the places you
sure.
can visit at all times. But we're kind of focusing today on some of the things that are more seasonally represented here. Give us a sense of some of those.
Well, there are the kind of only happen in winter sort of things, such as the Ice Carnival in the Loop, which is a big event that, you know, Joe Edwards, you have to take your hat off to him. He takes the one time of year that nobody wants to go outside and create something to make people want to go outside. Mm. So the Ice Carnival happens on January 18th this coming year. It's an all-day festival, including carved ice slides that you can sit on and slide down. There are ice sculptures outside of businesses in the Loop. There's a 5K run called the Frozen Buns Run in the morning. just lots and lots of fun things. So that happens once a year. Things that people probably have done or maybe have been meaning to do, ice skating at Steinberg Rink.
We're going to go into more detail on that in just a couple of moments, but that's a natural. And we've had a lot of emails and tweets from people who all mentioned sledding on Art Hill.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think many, many people know about it. And some subset of those people have done it. But a lot of people mean to do it and just kind of never get past the inertia to get out and do it.
So. Well, they can do it now, obviously.
There's snow.
It's ready and waiting. And apparently more is coming in a week or so. Let's listen to some people, Amanda, who are involved in all of this. You mentioned Steinberg. We'll talk about that in a couple of moments. But there's an event that takes place in South St. Louis that I had not heard of in my 40-plus years here in St. Louis. It's a relatively new event. It's quickly become a holiday tradition. It's Candy Cane Lane, and I know that you have that in your book. That's a section of Murdoch in St. Louis Hills. The neighborhood actually comes alive over the holiday. And I talked with Bob Classic, who was a resident, and asked him how it all came about.
About 10 years ago, a neighbor got the idea to wrap the trees in red and white to resemble a candy cane in front of his own house. And by the next year, about half were wrapped, and by the following year, all the trees were wrapped.
Everybody kind of plugged into it, huh?
Everybody kind of bought in to wrapping the trees with the candy canes, and of course everyone does their own home, but a lot of the people from the street get together to do what we do for the street, which is the trees, the lines that go across the trees, and the Merry Christmas sign, and the various things that we do.
Is it just one block of Murdoch?
It is just one block.
And are all the neighbors involved in this?
Well, by involved, I mean everyone does their own home. As far as the other things, the street trees and what we do out on the block, it's about a 50% participation.
And do folks, when they come to visit this block of Murdoch, what 100 block is it, by the way?
It's the 6500.
It must at times get to be kind of a mess. I know at Tillis Park, some of the people out in that neighborhood complain from time to time about all that traffic.
And we have some of the similar issues here. We always ask the neighbors, the other blocks, and throughout the neighborhood, the residents to be patient with us, because what we do, Don, is we not only do we put up the lights, but on the weekends and on specific evenings, we stand outside, hand out candy canes, and collect money for charity.
Is there a most spectacular display, Bob?
Well, there are two things on the block that really stand out. One is the Merry Christmas sign, which is illuminated. It's about 350 pounds. It's held up with aircraft cable between two oaks. Past that is a new piece that we put together made of PVC pipe. It's a tunnel of lights that we made on the street with red and white alternating lights that kind of go with the candy cane theme.
What's your best advice to people who want to come down and take a look at Candy Cane Lane?
Well, the first thing is, you know, Candy Cane doesn't stand alone. There's three or four other blocks that are illuminated to the extent that we are. But for seeing our block, we tell everyone the best way is to park and walk and then come over to the fire pits and say hi and enjoy a little bit of the banter that goes on with the people coming by and handing out the candy canes and that sort of thing. It's very enjoyable.
And bring some loose change.
And donations are accepted for all the various charities that we try to assist.
And what are some of those?
Well, we do Salvation Army and the Neediest Cases, Feed My People, Camp Happy Day, and St. Vincent de Paul.
That is Bob Classic. He is a resident of Murdoch Avenue and renamed for that one particular block, Candy Cane Lane, at this particular time of year. It's, you know, it's great that they're doing that, number one. But number two, the fact that they've raised thousands of dollars for charity is also wonderful.
Right. And he mentioned the neighboring streets. So I think people saw what was happening and thought, oh, you're not better than us, 6500 block of Murdoch. So a couple of the other blocks nearby, there's an Angel Avenue And there's a snowflake street also. And I have no doubt it'll continue to snowball.
Well, what else? Have you been to Candy Cane Lane?
I have been to Candy Cane Lane. It's a lot of fun. I made the mistake of not parking my car and walking and sat in what I really regret now is probably greatly smog-contributing congestion for a while. But yeah, it's great. I mean, if you can park really anywhere around the corner. It's, you know, a residential grid neighborhood, so it's easy to get around and just throw your scarf on and get out there.
And it's also something about rubbing shoulders with other people this time of year. I mean, everybody seems to be in a good mood, and that's right. not a bad thing at all.
Right. And I think for kids, you know, it's a very what I love about Candy Cane Lane is just it's a very homemade kind of tradition. They decided to do this, and especially if you have kids who get really into the hoopla of Christmas, it's kind of a nice antidote to just going to the mall and telling Santa everything you want. So.
You, of course, have a Steinberg rink in your book. Yep. How could you not have it?
And Steinberg, you know, I mean, I don't know if people realize there's so many things we have in St. Louis that I don't know if people realize that they don't exist everywhere. Not every city has a really nice municipal outdoor skating rink in an amazing public park. I mean, that's a pretty rare thing. And they've done some great upgrades to Steinberg over the years. Now there are fire pits, and just it's looking really good these days.
We're going to get that information right from the horse's mouth from
right
Annie Castle, who's the general manager of Steinberg. It's the largest skating rink in the Midwest, which many people may not know. It's open from mid-November to the end of February, and of course, this is perfect weather for ice skating.
This is wonderful ice skating weather. Could not ask for better ice skating weather. We got warm winter days and crisp winter nights and just a winter wonderland.
How many people do you think skate there over the course of a season, Annie?
Over the course of the season, I believe last year we had about 70,000.
And they can keep warm as well as keep fit, can't they?
Yes, we keep them warm up by the bonfire or you can come inside. The building is glass on the entire front and we have seating window side and rink side. So if you'd like to sit inside and stay warm and watch, you can, or you can sit outside.
You know, a lot of people, I think, have always assumed that Steinberg Rink was part of the Forest Park Forever agenda there, but it's not.
No, it's not. I have a separate contract with the city to be the concessionaire and to run and operate the skating rink.
What about special holiday events, Annie? I noticed the other day, for instance, there was a promotion that involved the St. Louis Blues.
Yes, we did have the Winter Classic. We partnered with Fox Sports Midwest to have a viewing party for the St. Louis Blues. Earlier in the month, we did have Skate with Santa, which is always a big draw because it's always a good photo opportunity. We do have a New Year's Eve party. The rink is always open to the public, and we always have admission prices the same in skate rental. But on New Year's Eve, we're adding a optional appetizer buffet that includes soda, hot chocolate, or beer and wine if you're over 21. And that's on New Year's Eve, and then we stay open till 30 minutes after the countdown.
There's really a rich family tradition involved with Steinberg Rink. I see so many families skating together. It's really nice to see.
Yes, it is. It's just amazing. This is my 12th season, and every year I meet some new families that are starting a tradition. And we have so many families that are just, you know, they do it every year. Maybe they'll come on Christmas Eve, or maybe they'll come the day after Christmas, or maybe they'll come on the weekend in between the holidays, or they always seem to have a set date where their entire family comes skating at Steinberg. And that's part of our tagline that we promote the rink by is come experience the tradition, because it is a tradition in St. Louis to skate at Steinberg Skating Rink.
Been going on for 56 years.
Yes. Amazing.
Any particular decorations that we can look for this year?
We have added a canopy of lights in the last couple of years over the rink that really sparkle, and they bring the stars right down to the ice. We have trees that are all lit up all the way around the rink, including the building. Inside, we have a snowflake theme because it's always a winter wonderland here.
That's Annie Castle, who is the general manager of Steinberg Skating Rink in Forest Park. With me in studio is Amanda Doyle, the author of the book we're talking about today, 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die. As you can tell from the title, it is, in fact, a bucket list. Before we take a break, Amanda, what else do you have in your book from Forest Park? That's got to be a treasure trove for what you're doing.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's when I started writing the book. I thought, okay, well, Forest Park, there's one, but that really can't just be one on a list of 100. So so I have specific galleries at the History Museum, for example, certain events that go on at some of the other institutions. I mean, there's just, you could spend a lifetime, I think, exploring the events and the attractions in Forest Park.
What about Tower Grove Park?
Tower Grove Park is the very closest park to my house, so I spend a lot of time there. And I think a lot of people are aware of perhaps where it is. Maybe they haven't been in it in a while, but it is, you know, it's part of Henry Shaw's great legacy to the city. And it's a Victorian walking park where you can take a carriage ride still, where you can go to a concert at the bandstand outside. That's actually one of the things on the list, is going to one of the summer concerts. It's again, it's kind of like a mini version. There are so many different locations, and people have their favorite spots within the park that they revisit time and again.
Big wedding spot, wedding pictures, wedding photos.
Saturdays in the summer, I mean, they're just lined up.
Yeah. You mentioned Henry Shaw. That's a nice segue from what we're going to be talking about after a break, and that would be the Missouri Botanical Garden, which is another one of the wonderful assets in our community, and I know that you have that included in your book. Again, my guest in studio is Amanda Doyle, the author of the book, 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die. We'll come back and continue the conversation with her and with another guest in just a moment. If you'd like to get into the conversation, feel free to do so. You know, you perhaps would like to name a place, one place you'd like to go, or one thing you'd like to do in St. Louis. If you were asked that question, what would your answer be? Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. With me in studio is Amanda Doyle, who wrote the book, 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die. We bring in another guest as well, and that would be Katie O'Sullivan of the Missouri Botanical Garden. Katie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I can't imagine a more pleasant way or place to go to work every day than the Missouri Botanical Garden.
It's not too bad when you literally work in a garden, that's for sure.
And even at this time of year, we think of gardens being outside, which they traditionally are, but there are a lot of things you can do in the garden to keep warm as well.
Right. You can walk in the garden, and it really is beautiful all year round. But if you get really cold, you can go into the Climatron, where it's a tropical environment all year round.
Right. Amanda, you, of course, have the Missouri Botanical Garden in your book. Anything particular you'd like to say about it?
Well, I will say that I have enjoyed the garden since I lived here, but I never, until I had a child, I didn't think of it as like, oh, it's a great kid attraction. And then I had a kid, and he's now 5 years old, and the garden is one of his most requested places to go. And even in the summer, he loves the Climatron, which is unfortunate sometimes. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's a place that, again, I think people come here from other cities, and you say, you've really got to go to our garden, and they think of whatever little botanic garden they have in their town, and they think, oh, I've seen flowers, thanks. And it's not a hard sell once they've been there. They really get it, that we have this amazing treasure that's so much more than, I think, what is evoked by garden, you know?
I think it is pretty great when you say a younger boy child especially can even enjoy it. So,
yeah. Well,
is there something special, Katie, to enjoy at this particular time of year? How are you set up for Christmas?
Well, this year we're hoping that maybe if Amanda rewrites her book sometime and makes it 200 things to do, that Garden Glow will be a part of it. This is our first season doing that, first time in 154 years that we've lit up the garden at night.
How so? I mean, how is that affected?
Well, we have about 500,000 lights in the garden on some of our most iconic images. So though the Climatron isn't open at night, you can see it even driving on Highway 44. And the maze is covered in lights. We've got 100,000 lights, I think, just in the maze, as well as Henry Shaw's house. And through our central access, a lot of the iconic places that are now in holiday lights.
We'll have to get over there. It sounds great. Are the lights colored lights, multicolored, or are they all a single color, or what?
Yeah, we have all different kinds, mostly white and green on the Climatron, but all over the gardens, and just different kinds of light.
I'm sure the neighbors love it. There's not too much light for the neighborhood, is there?
We hope not.
So when the Japanese Lantern Festival was at the garden, I'm assuming that kind of showed you that there would be an interest in like an after hours kind of event. I just remember that being such a huge success, and it was amazing to see the garden that way.
A lot of people did say that they loved seeing the garden at night during our Chinese Lantern Festival last summer. And
I'm sorry, Chinese.
It's okay. And one thing that it allowed us to do is put electricity in parts of the garden that hadn't been there before. So although staff members and some of our members and guests had said for years that we should do a holiday light show, this was the first year that it was really possible, and it's a result of that.
You know, it's been some time since I've been to the garden during the holiday season, but one of the things I remember very vividly were some of those Victorian buildings that were wonderfully decorated from various eras. Is that still going on?
Yeah, Henry Shaw's Tower Grove House, what was his country home, is decorated in a Victorian theme. And that's open during the day, and it's also open at night during glow. So that's another spot. If you get cold on our path, you can go inside. All the rooms are decorated, and it's pretty interesting to see.
Can you give us some sense of what those decorations are like? Because they are from the period.
Yeah, I think it's just a lot more extravagant than you might see in a normal home now in the neighborhood. There's wreaths strung on every bed and garland on bedposts and just a lot of food-related and plant-related materials as well.
Do you have any special hours during this time of year?
During this time of the year, for daytime, we're closing at 4 every day to be able to prepare for glow. Glow is not open tonight, but starting tomorrow, it'll be open every day through January 4th, with the exception of Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and December 31st. So best thing to do is to check our website for the exact time and date that you want to come.
When you say preparing for the glow, what sort of preparations are we talking about?
Well, it just takes a little while to get all the lights on and the music set up. We have a full entertainment act. We have some dancers and a DJ in the middle. So
there's a DJ in a snow globe, right?
In a snow globe. Dr. Frost and his freeze team of dancers.
What would Henry Shaw say about that?
You know what? I think he would be happy with how many people are getting to see the garden in a whole new way and how many people are seeing his house. Maybe he wouldn't love that, but we hope that he would.
They're not going to bother him right now.
Yes.
That's for sure. Did he leave any provisions for, obviously, this is his legacy, the garden is his legacy, but did he leave any provisions for holiday events and for holiday decorations and that sort of thing?
I'm not sure. I just know that it's always been obviously a tradition at the garden to decorate certain areas. Our holiday shows have been going, our floral shows have been going on for a very long time. And Gardenland Express, our holiday and train show, is something that is about the plants, which I think we're living his legacy well.
What about plans beyond the holiday season? Anything that we should know about for that is being planned for the garden for the remainder of the year, or through next year, I should say?
We don't have any exciting announcements yet, but we have some good stuff that we hope to be able to talk about later in 2014.
Oh, I thought we were going to get a scoop here. I guess not.
Not yet.
Yeah. I'd like to stay with us for a bit. I'd like to get some of our listeners into this conversation. We have Jeff calling from St. Louis, who wants to talk about old architecture, and that kind of fits the bill at the Missouri Botanical Garden. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I love old architecture, and St. Louis area just has a ton of great stuff. If I could mention three of my favorites, and I have questions about two. One of my very favorites is Oakland. It's in Afton, and it was designed by Henry Shaw's favorite architect, George Barnett. And it's a quintessential, elegant Italianate design, but executed in a rustic limestone, so it's a really neat kind of blend. The two that I have questions about are, this one would really be on my bucket list, but I have no idea how to access it. It's Allswell. It was one of the Lemp mansions, and it's in Sunset Hills. It's a real fanciful Tyrolean kind of chalet, and it's in a gated community, and I think you have to know somebody to get there. The other one I have a question about is the Eugene Nims house in Beetree Park. I heard that they were going to tear it down several years ago. I don't know if they have. So would you know about either of those, Amanda?
Jeff, you need to write a book, and I'm going to recommend that you contact a great local publisher. I do know about Oakland House, and unfortunately that's the only one you don't have a question about. And I should mention that Oakland House right now is decorated for Christmas. And in fact, a coworker of mine swears by that Santa every year for her children's Santa pictures. So all's well I have heard of. I don't know anything more about it than you do. This is similar to a lot of St. Louis experiences where you got to just keep knocking until you find the right person who can get you onto that private street or park and walk down it. I don't think it's a crime.
If you're curious to see it, you can go right up to the gate of the gated community. It's on Allswell Lane, and it's in Sunset Hills. It overlooks the estate overlooks the Merrimack River. And, I mean, it's if you love architecture, it's worth even just the peek from the gate. But, I'd love to go in it and see it.
I really think there could be a whole book in sort of the paths of buildings built by these brewing families, because so many of the buildings that we have today were, built specifically for the bushes and the limps and things like that as way stations to mark their daily travels. So those are both two I'm not very familiar with, but I will check them out.
Well, thanks.
Jeff, thank you so much for the call. And again, I'll invite listeners to get into this conversation. If you could pick one place to go or one thing to do in the St. Louis area, what would it be? And Amanda, we're not just talking about the city of St. Louis, obviously.
No. And in fact, I was going to mention, since Katie's here from the Garden, I'll say, even though Garden Glow isn't in because, publication deadlines, one of the sister institutions of the Garden, the Butterfly House, is a terrific winter destination, particularly, again, it's warm. You can go and enjoy some pops of color in what is otherwise a bit of a dreary season. And they have two great special events that are wintertime events, one of them in February called Hot, Hot, Hot. That's like a tropical kind of reggae steel drum music. Come just be warm and pretend you're somewhere else for a few hours. And then March Morphomania is another great place to go when it's chilly outside to just lift your spirits a bit. So,
Katie, we ask for our listeners to send us tweets, emails, and reach us through Facebook. And one of the things we have here is from Megan, who talks about going to the zoo or the Missouri Botanical Garden on a snow day. They're usually not crowded, and they look beautiful. Tell us about what a snow day is like at the garden.
It's surprising how many people love to see the garden when it snows, and we're glad that they do. It's particularly popular for photographers to come in that day when it snows. We work really hard to get our paths cleared off as quickly as we can when we do get some of those crazy St. Louis weather days. But it's just a magical place, I think, especially when it snows, and it makes you see the trees so much differently.
What are the crowds like during the winter season? Are they robust as they are during the summer?
Well, I think probably May is still a little bit more crowded than
December. Do you mean
size
wise, or are the individual people robust? Because it seems like maybe
maybe the wrong word.
But we do have a lot of people from the area that the garden is part of their holiday tradition, seeing the train show and just even coming to the garden when it snows.
Amanda talked about bringing children. Is it a big family visiting destination?
I think it definitely is becoming that, especially during the months when our children's garden is open. It's closed right now, but it's such a popular spot, I think, for families with young children. So
well,
we get a lot of families.
Plenty to do at this time of year. Amanda, back to you with kind of following up on Jeff's question concerning architecture. Mm-hmm. What are some of the architectural destinations that you have in your book?
Well, on the historic homes tangent that we were headed down till I realized I knew nothing about what I thought I was talking about. One of the great places in St. Louis is Campbell House, which is downtown in St. Louis. And many people will have seen it and not known what it is. It's on Locust Street at 15th. But it is one of the few extant Victorian homes in what used to be an entire neighborhood of houses just like that. It's a great place to visit around the holidays as well, because similar to the garden, they decorate in the style of the period. But it really gives you a view into the early days of St. Louis turning from a rough and tumble frontier kind of place into a bit of a civilized town with a trying to become civilized population. So it's really cool to see that. I think the Cathedral Basilica is a must visit for St. Louisans and visitors, whether you are of the Catholic persuasion or not. It's just stunning, a place to look around. And if you spend the time to examine all the mosaics that are there, you could learn a lot about the history of the city as well. It's sort of like reading pictographs from cave walls to interpret things that have happened throughout our history.
Plenty of places to go of that type to visit the city of St. Louis. I have to take another break now. We're talking to Amanda Doyle, who is the author of the book, 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die, and also who we have with us in studio is Katie O'Sullivan from the Missouri Botanical Garden. She's been with us during the segment talking about things to do there. There is plenty to do, as usual, in the garden. A beautiful time of year to visit. And tell us once again about the glow nature of what's going on at the garden right now.
It's our first ever holiday light display, and we encourage everybody to visit our website, www.mobot.org, to see the best time and place for you and your family to come out.
I'm sure it's beautiful. We'll have to get down there and take a look. Katie O'Sullivan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll be back to continue our conversation. We'll also take a visit to St. Charles. Lots going on there this time of year. Back in a moment. Come on to the conversation at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or you can also send us a tweet at STL on air. If you could pick one place to go or one thing to do in the St. Louis area, what would it be? This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back as we continue our conversation about things to do and places to go in St. Louis. My guest, Amanda Doyle, author of the book, 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die. And there are many more than 100 things to do, as we have learned, because a number of our listeners have already suggested things that aren't in the book. But that doesn't mean there can't be another book.
Sure.
Amanda, we've had Susanna has written this and wants to know where she can find this book.
Susanna, are you really my mother writing in disguise? The book is, thank you for asking, is available at Left Bank Books, both locations. It's at the shop at the Missouri History Museum. Looking Glass Designs in Lafayette Square has it, and other finer retailers around town.
Okay, Susanna, so there are plenty of places to go and find the book. I mentioned that we had contacted and reached out to listeners prior to this program going on the air, and we got some feedback on things to do. Some of them are of a humorous nature, I suppose. For instance, Sam, when asked what is the thing that he would like to do most, says simply, scowl. Bah,
well,
humbug to you.
There's
Sam.
Probably a great liquor store in your neighborhood where you can find the appropriate accompaniment to stay home and scowl all winter.
Well, that brings to mind Jeff, who wrote Drink Whiskey, the sweater you wear is on the inside.
Wow.
And Deb has written Hibernate with the cats.
I will say, hey, cats, that's not a bad move. They'll keep you warm. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking about sort of particularly seasonal things or things that are to do with Christmas or outdoorsy. But it's also kind of a great time of year to take a breather and just do more of those indoor things that maybe get lost in the shuffle in summer, because we have so many great outdoor kind of active things to do as well. But there are a lot of places that you can go any time of year that maybe you just wouldn't more naturally do now because it's, you have time, you're making the time. And one of the things is actually not in the book because, like Glow, it came along after the book was published, is the Missouri Civil War Museum, which is relatively new at Jefferson Barracks. You don't have to go there in the winter, but you might as well because it's indoors and there's a lot to see and do there. And just other places like that are available to us all year round, but maybe this would be a good time of year to give them a look.
How about places where you can participate somehow in what's going on? I mean, we've talked about sledding. That's fairly obvious. But were there things to do where you can be sort of actively involved?
Sure. One of my favorite things to recommend to folks is to go to the Third Friday event at Third Degree Glass Factory on Del Mar. These are folks who blow art glass for a living and for your amusement. But once a month, on the third Friday of each month, they have what they call Third Degree Fridays. And you can go learn to blow glass. You can make an ornament or a paperweight or something. You can watch other people doing their thing. They bring in music. They bring in, often there's food and some kind of artist vendor. So that's a fun place to just go shake up the evening routine a little bit.
And for sheer aesthetics? The beauty of it, and we've already mentioned the garden, obviously that's got to be high on the list, if not number one.
Sure. Well, I'll throw another medium into it, which is the concerts that happen at Powell Symphony Hall. And particularly, I, in the book, plug the family concerts that go on there. These are about an hour to an hour and a half performance length. I believe January 12th, they're doing Peter and the Wolf. And this is a great way to introduce young squirrely people that you may know to the fine art of going to a cultural event. Mm-hmm. The symphony really goes all out. Of course, Powell is beautiful at any time of year. And it's a great way to introduce your kids or, you know, kids that you know to just what it's like to go to a cultural event and experience it and be an audience member and do all that sort of thing hopefully they'll do as grown-ups as well.
That's a great idea. Let's take some more calls. Mike in Webster Groves joins us. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just curious, Amanda. Did you ever do a show called Free Candy at the Hartford?
Yes. In a former life.
Okay.
That's, wow.
I've seen your face before, and I recognize your voice, and well, you can tell everybody about what you used to do. It was a great, fun show.
You've seen her face. This is radio.
It's the best way to see my face most days, I can assure you. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yes, I used to host a live based in a coffee shop talk show because we couldn't convince legitimate places like KWMU to take us on. So, So Mike, what do you like to do in the winter in St. Louis?
Oh, well, you know, the garden is one of my favorite places because I'm the only one there, and the you know, the views of the trees, what the leaves on them, are just spectacular. And, I mean, it's just such a great place to go. It's your private garden in the winter, so I like to go there.
And are you a photographer? Because Katie's right, I do see a lot of folks there in the winter getting that perfect perfect Christmas card shot.
As a matter of fact, I got the in 2006, they had that ice storm. And I managed to get through to the garden when all my friend photographers couldn't get through. They chased them out, and somehow I got through, and I got spectacular shots of the ice storm. So, yeah, it's my favorite spot.
Mike, thank you so much for the call. We all remember that ice storm. I remember specifically sitting in the public library to keep warm because we had lost all of our power. But
wow.
that's another story. And maybe the libraries are in your book. Nice places to visit.
Absolutely. In fact, the Central Library renovation is one of the definite things I point out in the book. I think libraries are kind of an undersung treasure, not just for sort of the, you know, what they're known for, but also there are events going on there practically every hour of every day of the week at the city libraries, the county libraries, St. Charles County Library. They're a great, great resource. If you are ever bored, check out the library website. You'll find 10 things to do.
Did you say St. Charles?
I did say St. Charles. Yeah, we're allowed to talk about St. Charles, right?
We're going to talk about St. Charles with Carol Felzine, who is the communication director for the city of St. Charles. We talked to her a little bit earlier in the day, and they, of course, are in the final stages of their celebration.
We are actually in our final stages of the festival this year. We have one more week. We go right up to Christmas Eve. So we're getting ready for our final weekend with Santa parades and so forth, and we have all the traditional characters that people can collect character cards. And who knows, we might even have a little bit more snow this weekend to really get us into the spirit.
Uh-oh, Carol, I wish you hadn't said that.
I think it's out of our control, Don.
It pretty much is. Well, what are some of the things we're going to see? I mean, you mentioned the parade, but Main Street is always so attractive this time of year.
You know, day and night. In fact, we do have some late night shopping on Friday and Saturday evenings until 9 o'clock, and Main Street is so romantic during the holidays with all the twinkling lights and the carriage rides. I mean, it's really a fun time to come down and, you know, check everybody off your holiday shopping list. And this weekend we are definitely having parades, all the typical things where you can have your photo taken with Santa down in the Katy Depot. But this weekend on Saturday, we're going to have a special treat for our visitors. The Ambassadors of Harmony are going to be in town.
Oh, wow. That's always fun. They're so wonderful to listen to.
What a fantastic group. We love having them here. And they're going to be here Saturday afternoon on the 21st from about 1 until 3 p.m. They're going to march in the parade. And then they're just going to be roaming on Main Street, picking of various spots to just entertain all the passersby and sing and get us into the spirit.
My understanding is that there'll be something of an international flavor as well to some of the things that are going on.
Oh, absolutely. You know, out of the 40 Christmas traditions characters that we have, Don, we have 10 Santas from all around the world, and each of the characters have a little small, what I would call like a baseball-sized trading card that you can collect and walk up and down the street and talk with all the characters. And we actually even did something kind of fun this year where we did talking character cards. We have electronic versions of the character cards. So that's kind of a fun way to meld the old with the new.
And something that always blends very nicely with this time of year and the holiday season is marshmallow roasts.
Oh, you got that right. We do have, we have been doing that for a couple of years now, Don. We have a marshmallow roast on Friday evenings from 7 until 8:30, and that's at our historic Missouri First State Capitol, which is in the 200 block of South Main. And it's just a great time to get together with the characters, roast some marshmallows, and do some storytelling.
Well, Carol Felzine, if there is one thing, only one thing that you could do in St. Charles between now and Christmas, what would it be?
You know, I have to say I'm partial, Don, to just coming down in the evenings and just taking a romantic stroll, maybe even a carriage ride. There's something about just being down here with all the decorations, the characters are talking to people, and the carolers are singing and so forth. That just really gets me into the holiday spirit. So I think it's the evening, the romantic late-night evening shopping.
You seem to be a romantic at heart. Carol Felzine, thank you so much for being with us. I know you're going to have a wonderful end of the holiday season.
Thank you, Don. You have a very Merry Christmas.
Same to you. And Amanda Doyle, is there a better setting for this sort of thing than downtown St. Charles?
It's sort of out of a storybook. I think it's really, and I love that she mentioned the trading cards that the Santas have, because, you know, a lot of times if you walk into a just the full-blown street festival like that, you're not really quite sure where to start and stop. So that does definitely give a focus to your travels down the street.
I want to bring in another listener. Deborah has been waiting very patiently. She's calling from St. Louis. Deborah, thanks for being so patient. Go ahead.
I was wondering, how come all the east-west streets between Market and Washington are named after trees?
Named after trees.
I was hoping you were going to answer that question, Don.
I'm too busy thinking about those roasted marshmallows.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's very observant, though. Now that it has been mentioned, I guess I never made the connection myself.
Pine, locust, you're thinking
chestnut, of. Chestnut, sure.
Maybe this is the time to visit your local library and ask that question to one of the reference librarians who's dying to answer that question.
Let's take another. Sorry, Deborah, we couldn't help you, but Google it, and undoubtedly the answer is out there somewhere. How about David and Fenton? Go ahead. You're on the air.
I did something very interesting this past Monday night out at Fort Zumwalt. They had the Celebration of Lights and actually went through the whole park on a Segway.
Wow. Okay, so were you cold?
Well, of course, it was a little chilly, I mean, because of the weather and stuff like that. But, I mean, you bundle up and you have some fun with it. They have hot chocolate afterwards, and it was kind of cool. They just kind of talk about stuff. There's all these little elves on the shelf that you're kind of looking for, and it's just kind of a fun celebration thing that the city of O'Fallon, I guess, was doing. And then they asked some guys that have a Segway company to do a special tour thing instead of being, like, on a horse and carriage or in your car. It's much more out in the open and having fun that way. So that was a kind of a different, unique thing. And then I guess these people also that have the Segway deal do other tours around the city, like Forest Park and other places like that. But it was just kind of cool to see the lights differently other than in a horse carriage or in your car or any of that kind of stuff. So that was kind of a unique way to see some Christmas lights.
Plus, if there are people in their cars, you can zip right by them and just feel so superior.
Well, that's what's cool about that night is that night there is no cars. It's all
horse
carriage and Segway. So it's a different way, a unique way to kind of see the lights.
Awesome. I'll add that to my list.
You mentioned the Segway tours of Forest Park. During the summertime, every morning you can see people out there by the chase learning how to ride, how to operate the Segways so they can do just that. But it doesn't seem to take very long, and it's a great way to go through the park
quickly. There are bike tours of the park as well, which are great to do that leave just from directly across from the visitor center. So, yeah, there are so many ways to experience Forest Park. I mean, you know, I guess walking is kind of like passe, but you can also just walk. It could happen.
You can also jog, but you see inline skaters and, of course, you see bikers, and there's just so much going. How far afield from St. Louis did you go for information for your book?
There are things mentioned everywhere from, I would say, probably about Wentzville-ish area on the west, across the river to Belleville and Edwardsville. Because we are a bi-state region, and people, there are places in Illinois that are closer to downtown St. Louis than some of the places in, you know, in West County and St. Charles County that people are willing to drive in from. So I think just like, you know, the new things at the Garden and everything else, people are willing to travel a little for something they consider a quality experience or a unique experience. And we're blessed with such easy transit here that you can get all these places, you know, 40 minutes an hour at the most. So.
Well, let's mention a couple of the things in the Belleville area or Wentzville area that people might be interested in.
So some of the things on the east side of the river, actually, and one specific event that I wanted to mention is the winter solstice observance that happens at Cahokia Mounds. You wanted to know something on my list that I haven't done? This one I haven't done. Not because I'm superstitious, but because every year I think I'm going to get up at 3 in the morning and do this, and every year I keep sleeping. But on December 22nd this year at 6:50 a.m., if you show up at the reconstructed Woodhenge area of Cahokia Mounds, you can hear a little bit from one of the archaeologists there about the purpose of Woodhenge and the function that it served in the Cahokian society. And then you'll be there to see the sun come up on that day. So
something mystical and spiritual about all of that.
I think that, and then I think it's so mystical right here in my warm bed. So one, maybe this will be the year that I overcome my resistance. But it's definitely been on my list for quite a while.
How about the Wentzville area? If that's about as far west as you go, comes to mind?
I'm flipping through trying to think of the things that I have in that area. Some of the, you know, it's actually not on my 100 things list, but I do.
It's from your other book.
It is
the
from
long
my other
title.
Book. Yeah. Yes, the long-titled book. In Wentzville, there is an attraction called the National Horseshoe Pitchers Hall of Fame.
Okay. My jaw just dropped, but go ahead.
Something I never knew existed. I do not pitch horseshoes. I mean, I have thrown a horseshoe, but I don't know anything about the game. But there is actually a Hall of Fame for this sport. And if you go to the Hall of Fame in Wentzville, not only can you see the people who have been inducted into this Hall of Fame, but they will teach you to pitch horseshoes. They will teach you how to score horseshoes. Just like anything else, apparently there are rules and ways to keep score, and people care about it a lot.
Right up there with the Bowling Hall of Fame. That's true. With just a few seconds left, we have an email here from, it's just gone away, but the Bell Fountain Cemetery was mentioned as a wonderful place to visit.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great place to go, again, to sort of see, you can see the history of St. Louis unfolding right before your eyes just by taking yourself on a self-guided tour at Bell Fountain. And it's a fantastic place to see some architecture that you may have not seen before.
We have an email from Whitney. I have not yet read it, but I think it's an answer to a question. The city officials took the naming convention from Philadelphia back in the early 1800s. Great book about St. Louis is The Streets of St. Louis by Marcella and William Magnin, what it looks like. But
where we can find our tree name answer, right?
That's where all of that comes from, yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much, Amanda Doyle, for being with us and bringing us up to speed on some of the things that we can do here in our community and around it. The book is 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die. Amanda Doyle is the author, and she has written a previous book about the same sort of thing.
St. Louis neighborhoods, right.
In St. Louis neighborhoods, there's no shortage of the things that we can do. Is there a final thought you want to leave us with before we have to say goodbye?
If people want to get their own copy of the book signed, I'll be selling it this weekend at Schlafly Bottle Works from 8:30 to noon. And otherwise, I hope you get out and enjoy the winter in this great place where we live.
Well, the Schlafly Bottle Works is also another nice place to visit.
It's a great winter destination as well.
Winter and summer. Amanda, thank you so much. Good luck with the book.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to say goodbye to you and also say goodbye to our audience with some help. We're going to have the Ambassadors of Harmony do that for us. I can hear them now. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with U.S. Representative Bill Enyard of Belleville. And also about a new locally produced reality television program showcasing St. Louis. Once again, there's another one, folks. It's called Salvage City, and it premieres on Discovery this Sunday. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the Ambassadors of Harmony. I'm Don Marsh.